the longer-term objectives, which is not just to stay in power and stay alive, but also to reunify the peninsula.
High-stakes survival game for North Korea's ruling regime. It's Tuesday, October 10th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the land down under heats up. UN appeals for massive Rohingya aid. Buying allegiance in Southeast Asia. Flood planning and gliding to new heights. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump last week said only one thing will work when referring to North Korea's pursuit of nuclear weapons. While appearing on NBC's Meet the Press program, U.S. Budget Director Mick Mulvaney gave his explanation on what that statement meant.
What the president's clearly telegraphing, and this should not be news to anybody, is that military options are on the table with North Korea. They absolutely are.
In a tweet Saturday, Mr. Trump said previous presidents have been talking to North Korea for 25 years, and agreements reached were violated before the ink was dry. Sorry, he added, but only one thing will work. At the same time, North Korean state media reported leader Kim Jong-un views his nuclear program as a powerful deterrent, firmly safeguarding the peace and security of the Korean Peninsula and Northeast Asia against what he called the protracted nuclear threats of the U.S. imperialists. Grant Newsham, a senior research fellow at the Tokyo-based Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty it's really about preserving the Kim dynasty in North Korea, as opposed to what happened to Iraq's Saddam Hussein and Libya's Muammar Gaddafi.
It's definitely, for his self-preservation that he wants these weapons, and he's clear about them, but he says he's going to get them, and it's been a steady march towards them. And I expect it will continue unless it's interrupted. It's Kim's strategic objective, which is often overlooked by many observers, really is to reunify the peninsula by force, if necessary, and under North Korean control. And one way to move this along or get headed in that direction is to be able to threaten the United States with nuclear weapons and thereby create some distance, possibly, between South Korea and the United States. So it is important to look at Kim's nuclear weapons program in terms of his longer-term objectives, which is not just to stay in power and stay alive, but also to reunify the peninsula.
You probably have heard the remarks by President Donald Trump on Saturday that only one thing will work in dealing with North Korea.
Well, he's got a point there. But, of course, what we've never tried are real sanctions. There have been sanctions applied, but these have been half-hearted, haphazard, and really have amounted to almost nothing, with the exception of the sanctions applied to Bunkle Delta Asia in Macau in the mid-2000s. And those were really a look at what is possible. The Bush administration withdrew them, gave the North Koreans their money back, all in exchange for a promise to talk, nothing more. But ironically, it is Mr. Trump's administration which is applying some systematic and deeper sanctions against North Korea. And he's gotten more countries to go along with that. You have Spain, Italy, Mexico, even Kuwait have sent back or are going to send back North Korean ambassadors. Any previous administration could have done this. None of them did. So Mr. Trump, for all his tweeting, he may have a point, actually, about at the end of the day, there is no way to talk North Korea out of this. But his administration, if you look at what it's actually done, has for the first time in 25 years made a more conscious, concerted effort to really pressure North Korea, but also pressure the People's Republic of China. And without sanctions against China, there's really no sanctions against North Korea that the United States could apply, which would cause the North to back down.
Are those sanctions working?
Well, it takes time. It's only been about maybe at the most 9 months since the Trump administration has been in place. I'd say give it time, but the thing to really look for is what sanctions get applied to the People's Republic of China.
Grant Newsham said the day you see the Bank of China have its banking license to operate in the United States suspended for 6 months is the day you know Washington means business. North Korean leader Kim promoted, among others, his 28-year-old sister Kim Yo-jung to the post of alternate member of the Politburo. That's the regime's top decision-making body. Grant Newsham said such promotions have only one purpose, to ensure the most trustworthy are advanced to ensure the regime's survival, what he likens to an organized crime gang. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Trump says U.S. policy on North Korea has failed for 25 years. Kremlin calls for restraint after Trump comment on North Korea. Deadly attacks prompt ICRC to drastically cut Afghan operations. Pakistan's Shiite community under attack again. Pakistani anti-corruption body arrests son-in-law of ousted PM Sharif. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, visit our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Temperature records have tumbled across Australia as the nation's weather bureau reveals that September saw unprecedented heat across the country. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has the highs and lows of this warming trend.
Parts of eastern Australia saw temperatures in September, the first month of spring in the southern hemisphere, climbed to 16 degrees Celsius above average, according to research by the Bureau of Meteorology. It studied two bursts of extreme heat that spread across large inland areas from the southern state of Victoria to Queensland in the north. The survey found that seasonal factors and longer-term climate change were to blame, along with unusually dry conditions. Australia has had its warmest winter since records began in 1910, and one of its driest winters too. Some farming areas have had little or no rain for months. Craig Noyer, livestock agent in New South Wales state, says recent heat waves have demoralised the farming community.
The heat went straight through here and shocked a lot of animals and the country as well, and dried it out even more than as it was before.
The last 6 months of no rain has had the greatest impact around here on the farmers. That's just another knife in the back kind of thing for the farmers. They need rain, not even hotter temperatures with winds.
Researchers have also found that Australia's two biggest cities, Sydney and Melbourne, could swelter through days of 50 degrees Celsius temperatures within a few decades. The study conducted by the Australian National University asks how the city's hospitals, schools and infrastructure would cope under such punishing conditions. Parts of Australia have endured temperatures close to 50 degrees Celsius, but they've mostly been small and remote country towns, not major population hubs. In her famous poem about Australia, the author Dorothea McKellar writes, "I love a sunburnt country, a land of droughts and flooding rains." While this is a nation well used to nature's extremes, many wonder how it will cope if, as expected, conditions get hotter and drier in the years to come. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, at least 12 Rohingya drowned late Sunday when their packed boat capsized as they fled violence in Myanmar to seek refuge in Bangladesh. Officials said the bodies of 10 children, one woman, and one man have been recovered. They estimate that anywhere from 40 to 100 people were on the boat. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today. As the mass migration of the Rohingya continues from Myanmar to Bangladesh, the United Nations calls for millions of dollars more that it says is needed to care for them. VOA Asia's Ira Melman reports one UN agency is highlighting the needs of one of the Rohingya's more vulnerable populations.
The United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, estimates that over half of the Rohingya refugees are women, with approximately 24,000 of them pregnant or breastfeeding. The agency's humanitarian response coordinator, Priya Marwa, tells UN Radio much is left to be done.
These women and girls are completely traumatized. I can't stress the need enough. It's really difficult to hear their stories. I've met survivors myself. The fact that they've fled, they haven't eaten in days, they arrive to our safe spaces or our reproductive health mobile camps completely exhausted. They look tired. They are depressed. They feel like they have no hope, no future. I think the mental health implications are going to last. Psychosocial support is also the need of the hour, as much as all the other basic necessities always are.
Marwa says all of these women are vulnerable to rape and sexual assault.
We have to provide the survivors of sexual violence specific treatment. We have to make sure that pregnant women, breastfeeding mothers also have the care and the necessary support. Many of these pregnant women and breastfeeding mothers who are coming to our reproductive health sites and they fled and walked for days. The other day I met a woman who had delivered on the roadside, had no clothes.
However, as these women leave their homes in Myanmar and make the difficult trek to Bangladesh, they increasingly are finding a difficult situation once they arrive.
Our women-friendly spaces are literally running over capacity because of the need that these women and girls are expressing in terms of health services, safe shelter, food, clothing, basic clothing. Many of them are pregnant, they're breastfeeding, they need referrals. They have lived through real horrors, and that is really what's coming through in their stories. There are thousands of them on the roadsides, in makeshift shelters, in refugee camps.
Ms. Marwa says the job ahead is monumental but doable.
The needs are staggering high, and I think we're trying to do the best we can to try and cover all the gaps. We definitely need more actors on the ground. There have been a lot of NGOs who've come to our health and protection or, you know, gender-based violence-related meetings. I feel that the UN is prepared to respond to the crises as much as we can, and we are getting additional actors on the ground, which is, again, desperately needed. This is a crisis where I have seen so many vulnerable women and girls like I've never seen before. I think it's important to communicate with these communities, to learn of their needs, to respond. But it's also important to make sure that our services are coordinated, that we try to do them jointly, and that we try to provide them as fast as possible and scale up.
But this will cost money. UNFPA estimates that it alone needs an additional $13 million to meet the demand for its services over the next 6 months. Ira Melman, VOA Asia, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia: India's Supreme Court has temporarily banned the sale of fireworks in New Delhi, 10 days ahead of the Diwali festival, in an effort to curb the capital's deadly air pollution. The court ruled people who had already bought fireworks may use them, but no new ones could be sold for the rest of October. Light up your browser or phone anytime by visiting VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. China is stepping up aid to the Philippines, including a proposal to seek offshore oil together and a gift of arms to help Manila fight a Muslim rebel insurgency, indicating that both sides want an extra firm friendship despite an unsettled maritime dispute. Three firms, including China's state-owned offshore oil driller, are awaiting Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's signature to explore for fuel reserves off the Philippine west coast. Last week, the armed forces of the Philippines said on its website, China has donated 3,000 assault rifles with 3 million rounds of ammunition to help the military fight the ISIS-sympathetic Maute group rebels in the south. The transactions, alongside infrastructure aid from China, indicate both countries want as much from each other as the other can accommodate. They made peace only in 2016 after 4 years of squabbling over maritime sovereignty. Ramon Casipul, the executive director of the Philippine Advocacy Organization Institute for Political and Electoral Reform, says officials in China are seeking big benefits.
They would want as much as they can get. I would say the Filipinos are very nationalist in that position, particularly with regard to the South China Sea. But then the friendship, I think, is well received here.
Beijing is chasing stronger alliances around Southeast Asia to ease hostility over its claims to nearly the whole South China Sea. A World Arbitration Court said in mid-2016 China lacked a legal basis to assert those rights. The Chinese claim overlaps the exclusive economic zones of four Southeast Asian states, including the Philippines. China is offering aid and investment to rival claimants, Brunei, Malaysia, and Vietnam, as well as to the Philippines. Song Sang-moon, Southeast Asia's specialized economist with the private banking unit of CIMB in Singapore, says Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte welcomes China with special enthusiasm as a part of his shift away from dependence on the United States.
It's always a case of the other side more welcoming. In the case of the Philippines, obviously, you have a president, he really wants to do it. So you're talking about playing the Chinese off against Americans.
The United States has been an ally of the Philippines since its colonization of the Southeast Asian country ended in 1946. China opposes the U.S. military presence near the disputed sea, while Duterte resents Washington's criticism of his deadly anti-drug campaign. But Duterte swung back toward the United States last week with a pitch for more economic partnerships. The United States conducts joint naval patrols with the Philippines, and since 2002, it has placed 50 to 100 special forces on the southern island of Mindanao to help control violent rebels such as the Malte Group. China competes as well with Japan for aid and investment in a $167 billion five-year Philippine effort to modernize infrastructure. Jonathan Revelas, chief market strategist with Banco de Oro Unibank in Metro Manila, says U.S. ally Japan, amid its own disputes with Beijing, is vying with China for alliances around much of developing Asia.
Everyone's waiting at the sideline. It's really the devil's in the details. Basically, what would be the revenue share? What will China bring to the table? If you look at the ODA, you're seeing more from the Japanese than the Chinese.
Scholars in Manila say Filipinos want China's aid, an outgrowth of the $11.2 trillion Chinese economy, as long as it comes without political strings, such as conceding disputed tracts of sea. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for sending us this story. This news alert from VOA Asia. Pakistan's anti-corruption body arrested the son-in-law of ousted Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif shortly after his flight from London landed in Islamabad. Mohammad Sadaf Safdar was detained early Monday by the National Accountability Bureau. His wife was not detained. Read and see more on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, from the United States to South Asia, the news has been dominated by scenes of devastation at historic levels caused by storms and floods. VOA's Elizabeth Lee looks at what urban planners say are solutions to minimize the damage caused by floods the next time a huge storm hits.
From Houston and Miami to cities in South Asia, 2017 has been a year of devastating floods. A combination of climate change and urban development becomes a perfect storm for catastrophe.
Sea levels are rising. They have risen almost 9 inches in the last century. We're living in a warmer world. We're living in a world where potentially hurricanes could be more damaging.
But climatologist Bill Patzert says rising sea levels contribute to only a small percentage of the storm surge that causes so much flooding.
It has the appearance that flooding due to great storms or during the monsoon season over Asia is becoming more severe. So what's really happening here is that the population of the planet, especially along the great river valleys of Asia and along the coast, for instance, of the United States, we tend to migrate towards the coast. So there's just more infrastructure There's more people, there's more damage.
Including damage to homes built near levees and dams, says urban planning expert Kien Goh.
It's a symptom of the way that we have not been able to control development and to control where and how developers build.
Architects and urban planners say many cities in potentially flood-prone areas should rethink how they are built and their relationship with water.
Many urban designers have acknowledged that leaving out natural systems is actually a big problem. And the reasons why these cities are flooding is because we have taken away wetlands, we have paved over rivers, we have largely ignored the interaction between physical and natural systems.
One approach to fight floods is what architects call passive design.
Passive approach, which is what effectively nature has done from the beginning, tries to minimize damage, or as the Dutch have discovered, the water will be there, but how do you make it design in such a way that when it comes and goes, that the recovery is not catastrophic? So passive means, in a lot of ways, less technology and more kind of learning from nature.
For instance, we could design for more parks that for most of the year would be just lovely parkland that you can play with your kids or just visit. And in the once or twice a year events where it does flood, it's fine. It's a field. It'll flood and it'll come back.
Goh says studies show spending money on redesigning and planning a city will show long-term positive results in future rain events. But planners say since local officials determine how a city is built, it will be up to them to decide how to rebuild after a devastating flood and where the money will come from. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
We go from sea level to high above the mountains in southern Argentina, where two pilots recently set a new altitude world record for gliders. They hope the ability of their plane to reach the edge of outer space will turn it into a research platform and also inspire young people to pursue careers in science and engineering. VOA's George Pudich spoke to the pilots about their experience.
Towed by a small plane, the Perlan 2 glider with two pilots on board slowly ascends into the Argentinian sky. At about 3,000 meters, they release the towing cable and start looking for strong updrafts of air, called the mountain waves, to take them much higher. On September 3rd, they managed to reach 15,902 meters, beating the previous world record for gliders by 441 meters. Speaking from Argentina via Skype, Chief Pilot Jim Payne says it took 11 flights to reach that goal.
And basically, we take steps of a certain amount of altitude and airspeed, gather data, analyze that data, and if those data conform to our theory and the model that we have for the airplane, then we can safely go on to the next step.
Onboard cameras took spectacular footage, though the pilots were too busy to enjoy the view. There's no engine to fight any turbulence they may encounter. And even though the airspeed indicator shows the speed of only 80 to 90 kilometers per hour, the true airspeed can be much higher and the wings may flutter to the point of braking. Also, it's very cold up there.
We have electric socks on the pilots. We literally could not fly without those electric socks. We would get frostbite. And heated vests, and we're looking at upgrading our heating systems for next year because cold is the big issue that we've been dealing with this year.
Perlan 2 is made of special type of light carbon fiber with enhanced mechanical properties. Airbus helped in its assembly and transport to Argentina. The company hopes the project will attract young people to science and technology.
We want to actually grab the next group of pilots, engineers, mechanics, airport operators, flight attendants, basically kids that are in high school and university right now that may not have considered aerospace as a career. And we want to inspire them.
Pilots hope that eventually they will be able to break the world record in level flight of 25,929 meters, set in 1979 by the U.S. spy plane SR-71 Blackbird. They also plan to turn their aircraft into a non-polluting stratospheric research platform. George Pudich, VOA News.
We come in now for our own soft landing. You've been listening to VOA Asia. We'd like to say hello to everyone listening in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, on HELPS Radio at HELP University in Kuala Lumpur. Thanks for joining us. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Don't forget to stop by our VOA Asia Facebook page when you have a chance. We thank Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Daryl Smith, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.